Welcome to the Destiny Church Tees Valley podcast. As you listen, it is our prayer that you are transformed through faith, hope, and love.
This morning, I want to talk on the topic of identity. Who are we? What is it that gets to decide who we are? And I wanted to get us thinking about the way that we describe ourselves, because so often we don't really know where to start. The older I get, the more confusing I find the question is, when it's like, tell me a bit about yourself. And I'm like, I don't really know where to start. Where do I start? Where do I stop? There's a bit that gets a bit more complicated. And so when I was thinking about identity, I just did a really quick Google search. I wanted to see, what is it that is trying to, the world is trying to tell us that we should put our identity in? What is it that the books that have been written, the libraries that are filled with self-help, everyone that's trying to sell products, social media that is saturated with trying to help you find a new version of you, what is it that they're telling us to consider when we decide who we are? And just, I will be honest, I only stayed on it for about 2 minutes because I felt overwhelmed, because in a couple of articles that I read, I was being told that my identity was in my relationships, my family and my values, my nationality, my ethnicity, my culture, my social groups, my interests, my disinterests. It was in my personality, my temperament, and of course, let's not forget our career. It's in my abilities, my disabilities, it's in my addictions, my diagnoses, it's in my mistakes, it's in my history. And then just to top it all off, my identity is fundamentally in my feelings. That isn't even an exhaustive list of everything that has been thrown at us to decide who we are. It's no wonder we feel overwhelmed when the topic comes up, drowning in categories and labels and boxes that we have to sift through to try and work out which we fit in, where we stand on each one, what we agree with, what we don't agree with, what that means about us. No wonder the topic is so big that we just feel debilitated and trying to answer the question. Question, who are you? Well, I feel that when I was thinking about this topic and I was thinking about all the categories, as I was slowly trying to work them out for myself, I realized that each element that I said, they were all factors that can describe me, but none of them are the thing that defines me. You see, you can describe me by the texture of my hair. You can describe me by the qualifications I hold. You can describe me by the accent I have or the experiences I've been through. They are all an aspect that can describe me, but you cannot define me by any of them. And this morning, church, I want to help us realize that we cannot mistake the things that describe us with the thing that defines us. And here's why. The things that describe us are temporary. Often when we use the word temporary, you'll see it in the Bible, or you might hear it a lot in the sermons that you'll hear at church. When we talk about temporary, we don't always mean like, you know, 3 to 6 months, like a temporary contract or something. What we mean is, in light of eternity, in light of living forever and ever and ever with no end, then the 80, 90, 100 years that you spend on earth is temporary. It's really not much. It will come, it will go, it is short. And therefore, we live not in the here and now, we live in light of eternity. And the problem is when we allow our temporary states to become our permanent statuses, we miss the power of the cross. We miss the power of what God did on the cross. We see it in 2 Corinthians 4:18. It tells us we don't live by that which is temporary. We live by that which is eternal. Why? Because I acknowledge and I recognize that nothing I have on this earth, that nothing that can describe me, no capacity I have, no strength I have, no citizenship I have, is enough to sustain me for eternity. And the problem is when we anchor our identity in anything that is temporary, we are just waiting for a crisis. Because what is temporary cannot sustain you forever. And the very gospel is us saying, God, there is nothing that we could do to get to you. There is nothing that we could do to have a relationship with you, only the cross. Only what you did, God, of coming down to earth, of living a life that we couldn't live, of dying and then coming back to life, that is the only thing that is powerful to define me for eternity. It's why we say Galatians 6, verse 14 says, we cannot boast in anything other than the cross. That nothing that we can have, that nothing that can describe us will ever be enough against the cross. And so I want to talk to you this morning from the book of John, starting at chapter 1. You can turn to it with me. John, starting at chapter 1, is the fourth gospel that we have. It says this. It says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Let me pause there, because I know that might be a bit confused if it's your first time reading. Like, sorry, there's a word and there's who. What this is talking about is at the time when the writer is writing this, there's a bit of a rumor that's beginning to go around the community that says Jesus didn't exist at the beginning, like before creation. He came into existence when he was born through Mary. And so because they're beginning to say that, and this is beginning to go around, the writer says, I need to correct that. Because if you think God and Jesus didn't exist at the beginning with God the Father and the Spirit, that changes the whole faith. Why? Because that would make Jesus a creation, not the creator. It changes fundamentally our whole faith. And so immediately the writer is going, you need to understand where it says in the beginning. It's referring to Genesis, the first book in the Bible, where God talks about creation. It says, right in the beginning, before there was any creation, there was a creator. And that is the Word. And that Word that it's talking to there is referring to Jesus. So it's saying, in the beginning was Jesus, and Jesus was with God, and he was God. And then he likes to repeat himself to make sure people got it. He's like, verse 2, he was with God in the beginning. Okay, going from verse 3. Through him all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness. Again, still talking about Jesus. Jesus shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Verse 12, our key verse today, yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children of God. Children born not of natural descent. Our identity is not in our heritage. Children not born of human decision. That there is referring to a sexual desire. You're not just the result of someone else's sexual will or of a husband's will. We are not defined by any patriarchy or human's authority, but born of God. You can describe me by many things, but the one thing that defines us is being a child of God. A few years ago, I decided I was going to go and study the Bible at a university, what we often call Christian universities, Bible colleges as a little nickname. And so I felt that God was asking me to go and study at a Bible college. But as I knew God was asking me to do it, I kind of, you know when you like put a polite request in, like, okay, Jesus, I will, but like, if you could just do two things, that would be really great. And the two, like, pleas that I really had was I didn't want to go to a Bible college that was in the north called Mattersea. The reason being is my mum went to Mattersea, my dad went to Mattersea, it's where they met, and it's also where my sister went. So the second I step into the campus of Mattersea, I'm no longer Nadine. I'm Jonathan and Kath's daughter or Faith's sister. The second I talk, you sound just like Faith. I am known by my family. And so I was like, God, please, can I go somewhere else? And my second request was, because Mattersea had shared bathrooms, please, can I have an ensuite? And so Jesus did answer both. He was very kind. And so I went to a Bible college in the southwest called Regent's Theological College, and I loved it. I stepped on four, and everyone's first question was, what's your name? I was like, nobody knows me here. I get to assert my own identity. I absolutely loved it. But it didn't take me long to realize that in order for people to understand who I was, I did have to talk about my family quite a lot. Like, I don't know if you know much about my mum, but my mum loves decor. I mean, the weddings we've had in this church, anything, she is, over the top in a good way. She might be offended when I say that. I'm in trouble. It's okay. But she is great. She goes all out. And so my uni bedroom was all out. I was actually nicknamed Curtain Girl because I was the only person who changed the curtains in their dorm where nobody else did. And my room became the social hangout to the point of I never locked my door. And so I could regularly be out at lectures and I would get home and people are sat in my room playing games, watching TV, helping themselves to my mini fridge. I became this social space, and people used to say, do you not find that really strange? I was like, let me tell you about the family I grew up in. You never knew who was going to be at home and how long they were going to stay for. I am used to that. I would tell stories of my parents. I remember this one time when I was actually invited to join a leadership team within the college that I had nothing to do with. It was for the worship team. I don't know if you've noticed, I don't sing or really play any instruments, to my parents upset. And so I was asked to join this team with the sole purpose of stopping groupthink. They didn't actually want my opinion or my guidance, but when everyone else would feel too awkward to say a different opinion, my job was just to throw out a counter opinion so that other people would feel comfortable to then share what they really thought. And people used to say, Nadine, where do you get that from? I'd say, have you met my dad? It doesn't matter if everyone runs to the right, if he thinks God's told him to run to the left. Nobody, not even me as his youngest daughter, can talk him into it. He is a man who stands for what he believes. My favorite one, though, was when my nana came to visit. I realized I was going to move away from Malvern, where I was. And so I said, Nana, I've spent 5 years here. Come have a look. Come see what it's like. And so my nana came. She came to the house that I was staying in. And I actually don't really remember what she did. I can assume she sat, she told stories. I'm sure she probably did some singing and some dancing. I'm sure she had some biscuits in a bag that she was giving everyone. But all I remember was that as she walked out, all of my housemates turned to me and went, Nadine, now we've met your nana, you make so much more sense. My parents always say if I ever do decide to get married that they need to meet my mum and my nana because you can see where I'm heading. But I realised that although I went somewhere to assert my own identity, my identity does not stand in isolation. Who I am is linked to those around me. Why I am the way I am is a result of the DNA that's been put in me, the experiences I've had, the people that have taught me and mentored me. It's the same for you, for all the good and all the things you didn't like that you've tried to repel from. That's what is helping create us into who we are. And I love here in when the writer wants to introduce us to who John is. He's about to talk about John a lot throughout the rest, and he says, but before I can introduce John, you need to see who he's connected to. He says, first, let me tell you about God. Let me first tell you who Jesus is, that there is one who is God, there is one who is the creator, and then let me tell you what he's doing throughout all of humanity, that he has got a life for everyone. He has got a light that guides all. And when you know who he is, now you can understand what he's doing in humanity, and now we can find who John is. Because it's within this story, it's within these connections that he makes sense. Because when you know Jesus is the light, then when we say John came to bear witness to a light, it makes sense. If you didn't know that Jesus was the light and I said John likes light, you might just think he's an electrician. Like, it doesn't make sense out of context. And so John says, we're going to talk about it, but first you need to know about God. You need to know about what he's doing in humanity. And then that's where we'll define John, not by what he does. We call him John the Baptist. The text calls him John the Witness. He's not defined by what he does. He's defined by what he's seen. Why? Because what he has seen has changed him into a child of God. You can be described by many things, but you can only be defined by one thing, and that is, who are you a child of? The Bible is quite black and white. It's quite no gray areas. In 1 Thessalonians 5:5, we see that it says, you're either a child of the light or you're a child of the one who brings darkness. There's no one foot in either camp. You are either in one or the other, and whichever one you're in is the thing that is defining everything else that you do. And so if our identity is hinged on being a child of God, then the question is, how do you become a child of God? What does it mean? I mean, the text tells us in there, verse 12, to all who did receive him and to those who believed, he gave the right to become children of God. But you know what I see more often is people try and make themself into a child. Like, you know, okay, Jesus, I'm going to follow you. I believe in you. And so therefore, don't you worry. Don't you worry, Jesus. I'm going to be a child for you. You know what? That's really hard to drink out of. But you know what? I will do the things that you say. YouVersion streak, I've got it. Don't you worry. You know what, God, going to Connect Group, I'll do it. You know what? I even turn up every other week. That's quite good. No wonder babies cry so much. That's disgusting. But you know what, God? Don't you worry. Don't you worry. I'll turn up to church. You know what? I even chucked a £20 note in that offering bucket. Look at me. You're welcome. And you know what, Jesus? I will do all the things that you tell me to do. And what we do is we try and take who we are, what we've allowed, the labels and the identity and the descriptions on our life, and we will fit that into what we think a child of God should look like. You know what, God? Don't you worry. I'll do the right thing. And I know I mess up because nobody's perfect, but I'm on the right direction. But you see, Jesus doesn't say in the text, right, doesn't say, make yourself into a child of God. It says, you believe, you receive Jesus, and he will make you into a child of God. In the same way that when you were first born, you had a lot and nothing to do with it at the same time. You were the star of the show. You know, you popped a smile out and opened your eyes for a gasp for the camera. But really, it's something that's done to you. You didn't really have much a part of it. It's the same here. What we do is we say, Jesus, I'm not going to make myself into a child. What I'm going to do is say, Jesus, you can have my entire life. Jesus, you can have all that I am. And then as I receive you, you will make within me what you want. Now, you see, what we do is we mistake being childish for being childlike. Paul warns us against it in Corinthians. He says, I come to the Corinthian church and you should be on solid food, but I'm having to give you milk. Why? This doesn't mean we're immature in our faith. It doesn't mean that we're ignorant to what God's doing, but it means what we become like God. We are childlike, not childish. And so what is the difference? If I don't make myself into a child and I don't just have to do what children do, then how do we know if we're a child of God? You see, I could have a 7-year-old up on the stage with more degrees than I have. He could be like a child prodigy, probably more savings than I have, more experiences than I have. But he's still a child. It doesn't matter how much he's developed, he's still a child. It's the same, what do we call it legally when you have a child? We call them a dependent. Why? Because our status as a child of God is not titling what our development is in God, it's titling our dependency on God. That as a child of God, we have the ability to say, Jesus, I want to be dependent on you, and therefore everything I am, shape it into your likeness. I will wait and I will respond on everything in how you say. See the verb there that's used, believe. I love this. I'm sorry to my connect group because I do say this all the time. But in the gospel, the word believe and the word faith are both verbs, not nouns. In other words, belief isn't something we just like throw in the air, like Jesus, my belief. Have it. Like it's not something like abstract, we can't really see what is belief. It's the whole, you read the book of John, you read the whole, we will know you believe by what you do. You cannot be a child of the light and not forgive. You can't be a child of the light and it's the whole thing is defined by what we do. Therefore, if being a child of God is about dependency on God, I don't sit in a high chair and eat baby food because that makes me a child of God. But if you gave me a baby, I wouldn't start shoving Chiefs puffs in its face and saying I don't want to be legalistic about it. Why? Because it would cause harm to the baby if they're not on solid food. So if I have a child, I will give them baby food because that's what they need. See, we don't respond out of good works to become children of God, but because God makes us into children of God, the response to that is our belief in action. Because I am dependent on you, God, I read my Bible because I cannot be dependent on my own wisdom. I'm dependent on your wisdom. God, I don't pray because it makes me into a child of God. I pray because I am dependent on you every day for the breath in my lungs, for my heart to keep beating. I can't be dependent on my job. Why? Because I can't keep my energy sustained. It's miraculous that I depend on you. And therefore, if we are defined by our dependency, that changes everything else that we can describe ourselves by. If I am fundamentally defined by being a child of God, if my inner core is that I am dependent on God, that changes how I outwork every other description. You see, I'm not a single believer. I'm a believer who is single. And therefore, the fact that I'm a believer dictates how I outwork my singleness. I'm not just a female Christian. I'm a believer who is female. And therefore, how I my dependency on God changes how I outwork my gender. See, what we do is because our first and foremost identity is being dependent on God, that therefore dictates how we respond in every other area. I'm going to bring it into a close, and I want to ask you two questions. And if you don't have time to think about it, we'll try and talk about them more in Connect groups. And as Devation said, please do see the Connect point if you're not in a Connect group. We love them. They're the heartbeat of our church. And so I want to ask you these two questions. I want you to think about something in your life that you've allowed yourself to become defined by that was just supposed to be a description. Something that you've allowed yourself to become defined by that was just a description. It could be being a wife, being a husband, being a mother. It could be your work. It could be a mental health diagnosis. It could be a personality test that you've allowed your definition to go into. I want you to think, we've all got them, of an area that you've allowed your life to be defined by when it should have just been a descriptive factor about you. And then when you've sort of thought of one, I want you to ask this question. God, what would it look like to be dependent on you in that area? God, what would it look like to be dependent on you as a mother. God, what would it look like to turn up to work knowing I'm dependent on you? God, what would it look like to live on my street as a neighbor and be dependent on you? What would it look like in my moments of anger and frustration to know that I'm dependent on you? What would it look like in the areas where we've allowed identity to be found to say, God, what, teach me, show me, help me to know what it looks like to be a child of you? And the reason why I want to share this with you this morning is because this is not just an encouragement, feel good. I am a child of God. And when I feel down, I think about it. I might even post it on my Instagram. It's not just a feel good. When I actually grabbed a hold of what it meant to be a child of God, it transformed my whole life. There is a freedom in it. Because no longer am I chained to anything else. There's a freedom that God has given me through the cross. No longer am I dependent on what or how successful I feel I am. I am free in being a child of God. No longer am I chained to how good of a parent I think I am. I find freedom in being a child of God. No longer am I dependent on my mistakes and my regrets and my shame. No longer am I defined by any addiction or hang up, because there is a freedom in I am a child of God, and it doesn't matter how great things I do in life, God won't love me anymore. And how much I mess it up, God won't love me any less. There is a freedom and a security that when I base my life on being a child of God, it doesn't matter when a pandemic comes and the health gets worse. It doesn't matter when a pandemic comes and I lose my job. It doesn't matter what this world can throw at me. Though, don't get me wrong, we've still got to adapt and respond, and there's still a living in this world that we have. But our core, we don't hit an identity crisis because it's anchored in something that's eternal. Will you pray with me? Jesus, we thank you that you love us so much, that you invite us into your family, that you give us the new name of being a child of God. It's not something we have to achieve, God, but you just freely and willingly and want to give it to us. And God, I pray that you will help us as your children to step into the freedom that that gives us, that we won't allow ourselves to be defined by anything that you've set us free from, God. And so I just pray for every single person here. Lord, help us know the areas that we've allowed ourselves to lean a little bit more dependency into than we should have. Lord, I pray for forgiveness for that, for not trusting you. I pray, Lord, for mercy. I pray, Lord, that you will help guide us and teach us and shine your life and light into these areas, that not just this week, but every other week following, whatever comes at us, we can hold steadfast that we are children of God. Not just so that we feel good, but something that we can encourage every other person around us with as well, God. So I pray that you'll guide us, that you'll continue to speak to us as well as we leave this place. Amen.
Thanks for listening today. If this message spoke to you and you would like prayer, or perhaps this is your first time listening, then we'd love to connect with you at www.thedestinychurch.co.uk/connect. You're welcome to join us every Sunday in person or online at 11 a.m.